chapters in all of Jewish literature. And here we see that the Rambam makes the point that he's only going to speak about things that are already obvious and known to all people. We're in chapter 51 of Morei Nevuchim. So really we only have three more chapters beyond this one that's going to culminate this entire magnificent work called Morei Nevuchim. And here the Rambam says that I want to explain to you something of great significance, of great depth. And the way that one does so is by virtue of a parable. Parables serve a great role in communicating ideas. Very important. And again, one should make reference to the introduction, which talks about the nature of parables in of itself. Torah is about parables. Yechezkel has multiple parables. Yeshayah has parables. Torah deals with profound truths with parables. And our parable of the palace, we understood, we had gone through it very carefully, we understand it, and only certain people enter into the antechamber of Borei Olam, and even those who enter into the antechamber itself, and they're in front of the king, still in all, will not actually see or speak to the king, but rather, after they come into this inner part of the habitation, they have all the right characteristics, the moral perfection, the intellectual perfection, they have all the right characteristics. Still in all, as Rambam says, they should make another effort. There has to be something that goes beyond the effort of getting into the antechamber to go beyond. And there are different levels within the antechamber itself, and therefore, the prophets, Nevi'im, had different levels. They were all in the antechamber. Once you've been classified as a Navi, as a prophet, you're in the antechamber. But are all Nevi'im the same? The answer is, of course, not. They all have different levels. Harambam in Morei Nevuchim, part 2, chapter 47-48, discusses the different levels of Nevu'ah. So the Rambam is actually the first to ever try to conceptualize prophecy in such a fashion where he's able to give gradations. And nobody since the Rambam has seen a need to even correct the version of the Rambam. The Rambam's version of Morei Nevuchim stands. He's the only one that ever gave these kinds of gradations, degrees of Nevuah, of prophecy. And of course you could raise questions. How did the Rambam take Yeshayahu and put him on the seventh level and put Abraham on the, let's say, a ninth level, or whatever the case may be, or Moshe on the high level? What was the Rambam's tools to do that? Nobody did it before him. And the answer is that he had a preconceived understanding that if you saw something physical or visual, if it's in a dream or a vision, all of these variables and factors made your experience of Nevuah either higher or lower. Okay, good. So then the Rambam says, I'm going to interpret to you this parable, and we had seen that there are people that are far removed from the palace. That we had seen over here, like the Turks in the north and the blacks in the south, they are in that realm between animal and human. Human, the Rambam says, would be somebody that speculates and philosophizes. If you don't speculate and you don't philosophize, then you are below that, above ape, but below that of human. And that's fine. That's the Rambam's first point, right? Good. We are on page Taf Dalet in Kapach's edition of Morei Nevuchim in column 1. We're about 15 lines from the top. Adam she'en lo da'ah b'shitah, he has no understanding, lo ayunid, lo mikubilet, he has no truth. He doesn't connect. And remember that metaphysically, the Rambam says that in order to achieve almost humanity, you have to have your mind activated from potential to actual, and it does so by connecting to true ideas. If you only have false ideas, you never get that connection with Borei Olam, with the active intellect, which is the lowest manifestation of divinity, the active intellect. And if you have not speculatively, and you didn't receive any true ideas, you have nothing. You have nothing. So, what are you? Are you an animal? No, you're a beyond animal. But are you fully human as a rational person? No, you didn't achieve that yet either. You don't even think. You don't think. Now, not thinking, I don't mean, of course, you think automatically. We understand that. There are always biochemical processes in the brain that we would label as thinking. Sorry? As okay, I mean, does an ape act by virtue of instinct? I would think, yes. To a certain degree, yes. Doesn't think. It's really a difficult question because what really is thinking? It's not only, you might want to say, biochemical processes, because that certainly would include instinct. You might want to say that there must be something else, let's say something like self-awareness. Is self-awareness a definition of a human being? In other words, we'll agree that animals have feelings. They feel pain. And maybe you want to say they even have awarenesses of emotional connections to their dog master, right? I mean, the dog master feels a certain kind of connection. It's not really instinctual, but it's a something that's yet below thinking, but it is certainly a something that connects the dog to its master. That a let's say that a fish does not have. No matter how much you train a fish, unless it's a porpoise, perhaps, you know, a catfish or. I don't know what is the criteria. I don't know.
I feel like for the different criteria. A human being, no matter what he lives at, if you train him, so he'll accept it. His children, his offspring, can receive that training by observing it. If you train a chimpanzee, then the only one, the next chimpanzee, is back with original form. Fish, the next. So there is no. So if you take those people push, he said, if he's achieved. So I'm not sure we're going to accept that at the end of the day or not.
Okay, I buy that.
The next one you can rehabilitate. And then it maintains its rehabilitation in a transmitted way. Train the lion, train the dog. He's back to his...
the offspring.
Natural instinct, natural behavior.
Natural instinct, right, correct.
So it's not...
right, I agree. Okay, that's a good.
I would propose that as a model.
I agree. So that might be a better, more fine-tuned than mine. Okay, I agree. So he has these people over here, Nidheya Torkim, and Achtim B'Safon, V'Akushim, Achtim B'Darom, who live in the south, north-south. They're not humans. They're not human beings yet. They're potentially human beings, but not human beings yet. V'chol HaDomim Lahem Ele, and anybody's like them, Shesem V'Kamim, V'Din Ele K'din Hai B'Ti HaHogev, like a living being that doesn't think. So then you're not in that category. You're a nice person, you're good-looking, you are the form of a human being, but you're not that person yet who is classified as high hoger, one who thinks. Good. Now, okay, they're above the kofim, the apes, and they're below human beings. They have a form of a human being. But, otam asher em ba'ir asher, there are those other people that are in the city. Their backs are turned to the chamber of the king. Now, who are these people whose backs are turned? They think. They speculate. Right? We look at footnote 12. Tells us. Okay, good. But they came to wrong conclusions. So they think God is a lion or God is a sun disk. They came to the wrong conclusions. Either because of an error that took place when they were actually thinking, or maybe they were lying, somebody made a mistake, one or the other. These people are in the throes of error. They are mistaken. Now, because they've begun with wrong premises, the more they think, they're building on wrong premises. The further away they're going to be from the palace of the king. Right? And they are worse than the first category. They're much worse. Because they think they know. And because they think they know, they are building all kinds of intellectual castles on quicksand. Now, they're very dangerous, these people. Right? Very, very dangerous. Footnote 14, because the direction is wrong, as more that they walk, what are they really walking? The more they think wrongly. So they are really walking in a direction that's far removed from the palace of the king himself. Right? That's a good pagan. Good, solid pagan. And the more that he thinks about God as a physical, corporeal being, the more further removed he is from the king's palace. So they're worse.
We didn't say about God as a
example. Correct. Right. And these kinds of people cause necessarily so, sometimes, that's the money, to kill them. And to wipe away all traces of their philosophy of life. So here you could put Amalek. Why Amalek? Because use the word mihya, so I use this in terms of Amalek. So Amalek has an evil philosophy. Lo yireh Elohim. So the more that you allow them to proliferate, the more damage is going to be done. You allow Nazism to exist and continue and to flourish, the more evil you're going to have in your world. Therefore, you must destroy this evil philosophy, and sometimes you have to even kill these people. Kedeh shelo darcheh zuatam. They shouldn't cause other people to come to these same mistakes. Right?
Okay. So this is what? We don't know.
Incline your ear, my God, and hear, open your eyes, and behold, why are you telling this now? Is this related to this? Is it related? Is it related? Not related. I don't see the connection.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll go ahead. So give me a minute. However, there's another category of people, and it's getting more interesting. So the first two categories are above apes and below humans and the pagans. Now we come to the more interesting ones. Those who turn to the direction of the king, the kanes elav, they want to come to the king, to enter to the king. But they don't know really where the antechamber is. They have the right direction, they turn towards the king, to the melech, to Hashem, but they don't see where they are. Ham, who is this? This is the Jewish people who observe commandments. So the command people, Ham Hamoni Anshei Torah, those are the masses of people Torah, Klomar Amei Haaretz, all the ignorant people, Haoskim Mitzvot, they do Mitzvot. But they have no speculation, no philosophy, no metaphysical understanding as to what they're really doing. They're going through the motions sincerely, with great detail, and yet they're not there. It's an astounding statement, which people often are not comfortable of saying in a public context. You do the mitzvot without thinking of what and to whom you're doing these mitzvot for, then you're out of the loop. You're in the right direction, and you may get there if you end up and begin to speculate and philosophize, but till you get there, you're out of the loop, right?
Is he talking about here a person who's just a rote performer?
I would say no to that, really, because to me, it seems to me that, as you will see by contrast to what's going to take place in a few paragraphs, that it's even somebody who's not doing Mitzvah Melu Mada, which is a very low level of doing something, which means a Mitzvah you just do to do, because you're taught to do it, but he's doing even people that have great degree of intentionality, Kavanah, and everything else. If you don't get the metaphysical superstructure as to why you're doing what you're doing, then you're out of the Hatzer HaMelech, right? Let's look and see in 1 second. Those, if you want to look at the English now for a moment, I gave those out, the English just to compare. Those who seek to reach the habitation and to enter it, but never see the rules of habitation, are the multitude of the hearers of the law. The multitude, hamoneh, of the hearers of the law, I refer to the ignoramuses who observe the commandments. Now, let's look by contrast to the next paragraph. However,
why does he say how
it's
as opposed to
the
kaimim
hamoneh? No. I think Osik is mitzvot is what his term to mean. That's what I would think it is. I don't know. I wouldn't make a duke on that word at this point. Otam shegiu lehatzer. So those who really get there, we are there now. These people have gone into the hatzer. However, they are surrounding it. Mekifim seviva. Those are the rabbis. Hema hachamim. The sages. Hamaminim et hashkafot amitiyot. They have true beliefs. Derech Kabbalah. So they are near the Hatzer, right near it, but they are surrounding it. So these are the sages of Israel who have true opinions based on Kabbalah, based on traditional authority, right? And they study all the details of what you have to do halachically to do divine service. But there's a very large Vav Hanigud. So these are Hachamim, sages, who believe in the right truth. They don't think God is a sun disk. They don't think God is corporeal. They know. How do they know? Because their father told them, because their grandfather told them, because their rabbi told them. They have not engaged themselves in speculation. Now, question. Is there a distinction between the person that engages himself in speculation and comes to true conclusions and those people who only receive it by virtue of authority?
Maybe.
Okay, what would be the difference?
Come to it on your own.
What's the difference? So what? From the Rambam's point of view.
You're taking an active role in this thing.
Okay, so why is that metaphysically important?
Because it's part of your koach hadimyon. It's part of your intellectual. But I'm just saying, it's if the Rambam has previously discussed the power of the intellect, which is what brings you to the ultimate connection with Borei Olam. If it's a passive reception that does not actively engage the intellect and does it not actively open up and grow your own mind and sharpen your own tools, then conceivably,
any exercise. He's not going to exercise. He's not going to build up any muscle. You're just, you know, you're just not going to get it.
Good. So. Right. So you do the feet, but truer understanding. Okay. Now. Okay. Good. Now hold on to your point for 1 second. Hold on a second. I take it at this point 2 steps further, which is from the Rambam's point of view, the key of life is to actualize the potential mind. The mind is only in potentia; it's only potential until. Baruch haba. Welcome. Shalom v'racha. It's only potential and has not been actualized. If you're not actualized, you've not connected to the active intellect, which again is the lowest of the divine manifestations, which connects the man, person, to God. How are you connected to Hashem? Through your mind, from the Rambam's point of view. Right? Now, you might ask 9 out of 10 Jews on the street, how do you connect to God? He would say, through doing mitzvot, I assume. Rambam is fairly powerful throughout all Moreh Nevuchim and even Shimon HaPer HaKim, where he talks about the psychology of the soul. And talks about Koach HaDemyon and Hazan and the different categories, Chaim HaDaber and everything else like that. There he's telling you that, and this is more or less straight Greek philosophy. You read Aristotle's The Anima of the Soul. There he'll tell you the same exact thing. There Aristotle will tell you that it's the actualization of the mind which is what connects you to the ultimate, to the absolute deity. Things have to be, when you connect, when it's achieving a certain likeness to, when does a man become like God? In quotes. When he's thinking. Now think about Aristotle's understanding of what God is. For Aristotle, God is thought, because that's the highest thing that a person can do. Of course, what kind of question is that? It was David. Yesterday he caught me with, you know, unaware. But we got him today. He's wonderful. So the Aristotelian view of God is thought, engaged in the highest of activities that one can engage in, which is what? Thinking. About what? What is God thinking about? About the highest object of thought. What's the highest object of thought? God. Right? None of us would agree with that. If you meditate upon God, as you'll see in a few minutes, I'll say the same exact thing over here in a few minutes. Meditate upon God, you are doing the highest level of activity. Much better than eating or drinking or doing sex. No, you are thinking about God. So what's God doing? God is self-reflecting, self-meditating. God is pure thought thinking about itself. Thought thinking itself is Aristotle's famous formulation as to what God is all about. Right? Good. So now when you start thinking, what are you doing? You are tuning in to the divine mind. You're connecting yourself. Like equals connection. Like and like. So you're connecting yourself to the divine mind, and therefore you are on the same wavelength of God Himself. So what you have to do is potentially, you have to change the potential into the actual mind. Right? In potentia and the actu. The actu is when you're actually thinking. When you have concepts that are true, you've then connected to the active intellect, which is a manifestation of the divine being. Right? One of the emanations. Right? That's what Rav wants of you. Now, if you have the right ideas, right, you're not still yet thinking. You have some level of thought because you have the right ideas, but you have not actively done it, number one. Number two, your point is very well taken, is you don't really understand what God's all about. I say, Shema Yisrael, how many people say, Shema Yisrael, Shema Yisrael, I say what they're really talking about. There's 6 words. 6 very powerful words. How many people understand the oneness of God? One. In the student community? 2, 3? How many understand the oneness of God? To say to me that means the aloneness of God, that I accept, that I understand, that's no problem. We all understand that Ahad means the aloneness of God. If you want to go a second step and say it means the uniqueness of God, fine. We all know what uniqueness of God means. If you want to go a step further, the way I always teach and say that God's uniqueness is unique, which means that even though Harvey has a unique sweater over here, nobody else in the world has a sweater, and I have a unique watch over here, nobody else has a unique watch, our sweater and watch still share the characteristic of uniqueness, correct? No, God's uniqueness is unique. So even the uniqueness is not shared. So his uniqueness is a whole sui generis. It's a whole different category. His uniqueness is unique. So good, that's another level of Ehad. But really getting to the highest level of Ehad, the oneness of God, none of us understand what it really means. One can only grasp it almost at the point when intellect stops and here's an ironic point, then intuition begins. Certain point of thought. You can think, and at a certain point you take that leap beyond rational categories and you grasp it as a lightning bolt strikes in a flash, say, I got it, I understand it, and then it's dark again. As I mentioned to you, to this class, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I had that experience once. When doing Moreh Nevuchim in graduate school, when you're doing this kind of stuff, you know, 17, 18 hours a day, and thinking about this, I had oneness. What does it mean? And I had a intuition, at a flash, I understood it, and it was erased. Literally in a split second. I got it. Close the book. And I, you know, whatever that experience was, I can't explain. But you can grasp things intuitively, and then try to, again, intuitively funny, because intuition seems to be a lower level of understanding. You intuit something. It's, yes, low, but it's also on the highest. Once you've gone through, done all this, you have that brainstorm, you got it, it's there. Similarly, I've analogized to the famous work, Star of Redemption, by Franz Rosenzweig, one of the most profound philosophical works of the 20th century. Very few people could actually get through the entire book. It's a very difficult book to get through, what he really means. And what happens? World War I, sitting in a trench, he has this insight, this blast of divine thought. Wow, I understand it all. I got it all. Star of Redemption, I know what it's all about. And then he spent the next 10 years fleshing out the details. What did I get? What did it mean? Then his mind started analyzing, what is this all about? How does God create the world? Creation, revelation, redemption are 3 points on the star of redemption. It's a fantastic work, but really a closed book to most people because it's so difficult.
It sounds that this would be the Rambam's reason for saying why the Makom Sheba'alei Teshuvah Omdim Tzadikim Gemurim Menachim Me'Ha'amo.
Explain more.
Meaning that, you know, how one would explain that from the Rambam's standpoint is a tzaddik amud, he's born, he's raised,
he's
into
trained.
The entire, trained into the entire acceptance mode of all these ideas.
Good point,
he's
right.
Accepted them all very, very calmly,
without speculating,
easily, without speculating, without wrestling, without fighting, without intellectual challenge to a great extent. Now comes his Baal Teshuvah, who now has to, it seems, to some extent,
think through
intellectually,
absolutely,
battle to come up with an intellectual understanding. If it's true that this Baal Teshuvah is an intellectual Baal Teshuvah, as opposed to maybe Baal Teshuvah who's been seduced by some Kabbalistic formulations of some sort, you know?
I don't anybody like that. No. Nobody. But okay, agreed. Great point. The Baal Teshuvah, who is now fought through intellectually, and we know people like this, we're at a higher level. I haven't seen the Rambam say that anyplace, but I think it's a very good point, and we should look up the Rambam's, maybe Pushna Mishnayot, where he might talk about that particular Gemara in Bir Achot. It'd be interesting to see that. Good, I like that. Hamonim et ha-shkavur ha-mujud ha-chavam. Now, they're scheming, and they do all the right deeds. Dineh ma'aseh ha-avodot. Lot amiku. However, there's a very large but over here as well. However, Lord hit amiku. They do not delve deeply into ayun, speculation. Be a sodort to the fundamental principles of religion. Now, fundamental here does not mean simple. It means existence of God.
Yeah, I think that's why he uses the word oskim. Osek denotes a mechanical aspect. Lehitamir denotes a more mental operation, a more ayun operation of the mind. And, you know, the halachic idea of mitasek. As a person who's doing something, the mitasek, there's no kavanot, there's no proper intentions. You know, mitasek patur. Therefore, it's a low level of activity.
So who?
Give me another category.
You have a mitasek, but you're defining as somebody who just does it. Mechanical.
That's the amaadit. The amaadit is also osek, then it's vort, and then.
So what's the next level up? Here's give me another level up.
No. Osek, you have the amaadit is osek, then it's vort.
With no speculation.
Right. Then you have the hachamim who are askim bedine ma'aseh ha'abudot.
Right.
Who are more involved in the halakhic
the
osakim realm. They're actively involved.
What's the difference between the amaadit and the hachamim?
I'm a adit as osek the mitzvot. He's only engaged in mechanically doing the mitzvot.
And hachamim.
The hachamim are only engaged in the mechanical study of and activity involved in doing the dinim.
But they do have. What do they have? How are they different? They have truth. Accepted with traditional truth.
Even the Hakam means you're performing the mizvah. Everyone performs the mizvah for Harambam.
Yeah, but
the Hakam would be mitamir, so he'll go to another level. He's never going to accept mitamir as a substitute for mitasir.
He agrees.
That's why he's telling you. That's exactly what he's saying. The Hakamim are not mitamir. That's why he's his problem.
Anyone who's mitamir is never going to substitute mitamir for mitasir. Mitasir is the fact. That's what you have to do. Everybody has to be mitasir. You can stop at mitasir and you stay at the level. Could go beyond
Amir
Mit'ammeh.
But don't
do Mit'ammeh at the expense of
Mit'ammeh.
That's not acceptable.
Oh, no. I agree. He agrees.
Right.
You're saying that it's a higher level, one who's Mit'ammeh.
Then it's only Mit'ammeh that's Mit'ammeh.
No, but we have three levels. We have three levels here. You guys are missing the second level. You have the Osek Mitzvot. That's number one category. And they're outside the antechamber of Hashem. They never get into the antechamber. And you have HaChamim, who are also Oskim, but they also do what? They have received Hashkafot Amitiyot Derech Kabbalah. Second level. Now we don't get to the third level yet, right? Loit Amiku Ben Yunis Loit Atat. They did not speculate or delve into the basic principles of religion, which means existence of God, the nature of God, the love of God, and Taramban Echot Teshuvah tells what is love of God based on? Knowledge of God. He who knows God will ultimately love God, right? So that's fine, that's good. They didn't do any of that. They didn't investigate. So they are like those people that will accept things equal to the same thing to each other or geometrical propositions without going through it themselves. Parallels never meet. Right? We all agree parallels never meet. So how do you know? You didn't do it yourself. That's your point before. That the person that goes through the proof of parallel lines never meeting will understand that more profoundly than he who just accepts it. Right? In high school, 10th grade, we go through the proof. Prior to that, we were told that we never went through the proof. Right? So, when you obviously go through the steps and understand it more profoundly, then he simply accepts it. So, the Achamim over here are those who accept and do the mitzvot, but they're still outside because they did not hit Amikud, they did not delve into the basic principles of religion. And we have one more level yet. Yeah? Okay.
So, often we go through and understand that you can deal with what if you just accept it, it's very fine. Concrete.
It's
it changes just a little bit. We can't handle that.
Right.
You didn't know how the curve develops. So let's say you take the right instead of the left.
Right.
When you start building, you can understand how right and come back.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah. But you're going way beyond he's going yet. You're going two steps ahead of him. Right now he's only at the third level of Oskim Mitzvot and nothing more. Hachamim Oskim Mitzvot and also add on true beliefs based on Kabbalah. Mm-hmm. And you're right that really freezes you. You don't really understand it. You just accept it. God is one. But you don't really understand. What does God is one mean? What does God is one mean? Not God is alone. And not God is unique. And not God is unique is unique. God is one. We can't conceive of that because everything that we know is a composite body. A table, a pen, a shirt, a watch. They're all composite. We are composite bodies. God is not composite bodies. This is so critical that the unity of God or the oneness of God is so significant. In Echot Teshuvah, chapter 5, Haramam says, if you believe God's corporeal and do all the mitzvot, you're out of it. You're on game M. You're not going to have anything. And then Avad is very upset about that. Rambam, what are you saying that for? Your man's a pious Jew. A nice, old, good, shtetl Jew. He's very pious. All mitzvot, he's very pious, and he loves God very much. There's all that, right? We all agree. But he thinks God has a body. He says God has a place. God's up there. Where's God? Oh, he's there. And he believes in God's corporeality. That man is Hel Enochak Olam Haba. Because of the Rambam. Why? The Rambam is because once you think of God corporeally, then you're on the same track as an Avodah Zarah track. You think of God as a human being but stronger and able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. When you think of God, you have to think of God as different. Essentially different. We are composite. We are corporeal. God is incomposite and non-corporeal. If you think God is corporeal, then you are on the track of idolatry. And therefore you have no Haklam Abba.
Right. but at the other end, they don't do any mitzvot. They're not necessarily interested. You hear they're mitzvot, they're dealing it, and they're doing, but they're really not doing any mitzvot over there. They're jumping the level to understand, should I do?
Right. Rama would never want somebody to jump. The Rambam is a halachic Jew. So he would certainly agree to be mitasek and mitzvot, but he wants much more than that. He's not going to let you simply go your route or the other route. The route is mitasek alone is out, but your route also would be out as well. But again, your point's well taken in that many of those who studied the Rambam would say that the Rambam's real persona is his philosophy, and the other stuff is only a side dish. The Rambam, there's a wonderful article by Marvin Fox on this topic called The Many-Sided, Multiple-Sided of the Rambam, which means the Rambam was many things to many people. From the far right wing to the far left wing intellectuals, the Rambam was adopted by all and all those in between. Rav Harap in Israel is a far wing, says the Rambam is one of us. And Ahada Am, Asher Ginsburg says the Rambam is one of us. Pure intellectual, pure philosopher. So there are those who would say that the root of understanding all is the issue involved in getting into the Hatzer. Now let me take your point, keep it on the table, and say whether that fits into the next category. Right, the next category is critical important, and see whether that supports or not supports your statement.
I want to suggest the word. You imply that the concept strongly. When it says the Hatzer, it means to validate. Can I suggest a word?
Which word?
It says the Hatzer.
To investigate. Lo hakru klal.
It's more than investigate, it's validate. When you come up with a concept, you have to validate it. Not just come up with a conclusion.
Hakira, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Lo hakru?
We need the Arabic.
You have to validate it.
We're getting into the philology issue.
That's right, yes, yes.
He validated it. His word is not coming up.
It's going to come on.
He validated it in all applications.
I have the Arabic. I would say, I would differ because later on you'll see he used the word demonstrate, which in the Arabic is burhan. Burhan is to demonstrate in Arabic. It'll take that in a minute. And so at this point, hakru, hakru, and let's see what he says. It's not investigate is what I meant. Hakru means to investigate. Let's see what he says over here. True opinions, traditional, based on traditional authority, and say the law, courts of precedent, but do not engage in speculation concerning the fundamental. So, lo hakru, okay, let amakub ayun. They do not engage in speculation, right? Concerning the fundamental traditional version, and make no inquiry. Lo hakru. They didn't investigate. They didn't make any inquire regarding ratification of belief. So they didn't speculate. So let's hold on to that point for a second. However, this is a very big however. Now we're now in the room. Or Tanashit Asku, those who have it Asku engaged in the Ayun Bersudot Hadat with speculation about the fundamental principles of religion, meaning existence of God, the nature of God, the love of God. Kevad mechnesu el hapros dorim. Have all dorim. Yeah, it's funny. Have already gone into the hallways. What he means by that, I think, is they're there. They're into the prosdorim is mean it means the room. They've engaged. Now, what's the level mitzvot of this last category? What's level mitzvot? Otanashit asakubinun yisudot adat kevanech vesu el prozorim. Well, what they do? But those who have already engaged in speculation about the function of religion have already entered into the antechambers. Ubnei adam sham shonim at b'safek. And there are different degrees. Aval mishe hu saga lo ha'ochacha. But he who has grasped to him the hochacha, the demonstration upon all that can be demonstrated. What does that mean? Means that not all issues of religion and elementary principles of that can be demonstrated. But you have to be smart enough to know that which can be demonstrated and which can't be demonstrated. In other words, proving God's existence, can be demonstrated or not? Answer, yes. According to the Rambam, starts with the Bukhim, the first part, with acceptable propositions to everybody, and based upon those acceptable propositions to everybody, he will prove God's existence. Right? Good. As many theologians have done. St. Anselm had the famous ontological argument for God's existence, ontological. Aquinas, who got it from the Rambam, had the cosmological argument for God's existence, and the teleological, which the Rambam had also. Aquinas got it from the Rambam. So all of these were proofs dealt with and discussed and rejected by Kant at one point or other for various reasons. But you have to know what can be proven and not be proven. Now, let me make the point over here that the issue is so critical that there are three terms in Arabic that we've discussed before. The term elim, which means absolute knowledge, that which is proven. What's a good example of that? All bachelors are unmarried. Or, the proposition, God exists, is provable and demonstrable. So therefore, if you know that God, it's not because you believe, because you know it, that's elim. And you have tekad, which means where there's smoke, there's fire. Reasoned conclusions. Could they be mistaken? Yeah, you might have smoke and there was no fire. What was it? A magical trick, right? Or I may have made a mistake. Let's say, for example, I see a Morris Asher from two blocks away. I say, oh, here's the height, the shape, the build, the look of a Morris Asher. And then, so I say, oh, that's, hi, Morris Asher. I come up, oh, it's not Morris Asher. It's his cousin who looks like him, but it's not the Morris Asher. So I made a reasoned mistake based on what I had seen. Right? That's artikad. And you have amanat, which means pure belief, such as hatimitim, yomot ha-mashiach, and such. Now, in the 13 principles of the Rambam, at the end of Perek Helek, he gives you 13 principles, and the first three or four are elem, then nebuat moshe. What is that? It's artikad. Nothing is necessarily demonstrably true that Moshe had nevuah. It's what my grandfather and great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather told me. So I accept it on the basis of this traditional authority. Okay, that's called artikad. And then amanat would be the last three or four principles of Shechad Matin, or Mashiach, etc.
Right. So that's arguing that Moshe Deor doesn't deal with Alim, or he...
Depends who you ask. The book really is known in Arabic as Emunot Deor. It's really an original Arabic type of
Wa'atekad,
right. Where he tries to take beliefs and put them into Aitekad. But he, because of his own understanding of the psychology of learning and knowing, he seems to say, based on various Islamic thinkers, the Mutazilites, that even Aitekad is absolutely true. And so, therefore, when you have a belief that your great-great-grandfather told you, that's viewed as absolutely true. As, for example, now you could throw this around. Yudan Levi says that because all the Jewish people experienced Har Sinai, it's true that Christianity was founded by one person and Islam was founded by one person, right? That we know.
Right.
Jews are founded by a whole throng of people. He'll call that absolute, irrefutable, incontrovertible proof.
Yes.
That's what Yudan Levi says. In other words, for him, the standards of what is acceptable as absolute and the Rama would differ. Different. The Rambam would not say that. So it depends upon how much Greek philosophy you knew and what principles of logic you believed in. So that would be into that question. So let's go on. Let's finish. So, therefore, so you have to know what's provable. If you think you've proven something absolutely and you have not, then your logic is off and you have fallen.
Okay, damn so.
Is it up to over here? Which one?
It's over here.
Yeah. Monday, Thursday, page what? Oh, it's Tachanun. Okay, Tachanun.
Why don't they know?
What's that? Tachanun, on Monday and Thursday, we say this, correct.
Why don't?
So we said it today.
I'm not saying those.
Ashkenazim say it? We
don't,
say it?
No, don't. So.
Who doesn't say it? Ashkenazim or we don't say it?
That's it, yes.
We don't say it when the time is short and people have to catch the train.
Why don't they know?
Why don't we say it?
Yes.
Because we are busy. You don't have time to catch the train.
Read it.
It's beautiful to read.
I don't need to.
He will merciful atone iniquity. I agree. And he will not destroy. He frequently withdraws his anger, does not arouse all his rage. You, Hashem, do not withhold your mercy from us. May your kindness and truth always protect us. It's beautiful. I agree. We said it today, but often enough, it's very difficult to get it all in. So we just say the first and last paragraphs. You're right. I agree. But what am I going to do? People have to catch a train at 10 to 8. I'm sorry. That's what I have to do.
You have to start 5 minutes early.
We tried it didn't work. Oh, you finished it? Okay, great. Thank you.
We're now ready to make take the big plunge for 5 minutes.
We tried it, didn't work out.
No, they're ready. They've reached that mark.
We didn't get there yet, but it's a good thought because it happens to be very beautiful to say it. You're right. Okay, good. But now it's clear to you. It's clear to you. It's barur to you from the divine issues. Can you get to absolute truth regarding God? No. But that which is humanly understandable, you've gotten to. That which is provable, you've proven. Rambam is very much aware of the limits of the intellect. And interestingly enough, that the arch-rationalist of the Jewish tradition really will go eventually beyond rationalism and go to that, what I described before, as the intuitive grasp of truth. And then you're going to try to explain it rationally. But really, the Rambam is so sharp and so aware that he's aware of the limits of reason, and that going beyond the limits of reason is beyond rational, really ends up becoming what? Prophecy. Prophecy. The Navi goes beyond the rational, beyond the limits of what's known, which is interesting, or knowable, I should say. And it's close like he knows what's not possible to prove, but close to what's right. Now you're in. Now you're in the Hazir. This is the ultimate step. Listen to the English. Those who have plunged into speculation concerning the fundamental principles of religion have entered the antechambers. People there indubitably have different ranks. Whoever has achieved demonstration to the extent that it's possible of everything that may be demonstrated, and who has attained divine knowledge to the extent that it's possible, and that may be ascertained, and who has come close to certainty, those matters in which one can only come close to it, has come to be, now notice, to be and not see. We discussed before the word seeing God. That's a low level. You've come to be with the ruler in the inner part of the habitation. Good. So those four categories, the category of he's outside the city, like the above the apes, he who has pagan false beliefs, he who does the mitzvot and no more, and then you have next category, which is divided into four. A would be who has true opinions based on traditional authority and does the mitzvot, is 4A. Now 4B is those who are speculating all day long and have demonstrating all day long and have ascertained divine matters, that which has to be ascertained. They have all of that they have, he's in the chamber. So you have five categories or four categories. Why do I make a distinction? What am I concerned about? I'm concerned about 4B. Is 4B an extension of those who do mitzvot and accept traditional authority beliefs? And except that 4B does the mitzvot, and how's he above 4A? He speculates. They both have truth, remember. 4A has true opinions based on authority, and 4B has true opinions based on his own speculation. All you want to say, and this is a critically important issue, that really it's not 4, but rather 5, and 4 is left behind the dust, because they only accept true opinions, though they do the mitzvot, and they are in the antechamber, or they're not even in the antechamber, they're around the antechamber, they don't get inside. And 5 says that only he who speculates and philosophizes right. gets into the antechamber and is with God.
Right. So why is the Rambam now giving up the notion of Ro'eh, B'Shomeya, U'Medaber, Emanel? He now gives you the quintessential achievement of Nimtza Emanelech B'Toch HaHatzer.
Right, that's the final
one. But previously, when he started talking about this whole idea that people get into the Hatzer and Hamasov betocha Hatzer adain eno roet amelech umetaber imo, but he has still a tahalich aher l'sot bo v'achar kach imtzav tnei amelech ve'yirehu merachok u'yishamad v'nei amelech.
Okay, good.
So why does the Rambam now stop and say that the highest achievement is Nimtza Emanelech?
You're with him.
Wait. So what you're pointing out over here is that we pointed out last time that we studied this, is that the Nimshal and Mashal are not exactly equivalent. Here we have the Nimshal, which we said, which concludes with being with the ruler. Can one make a haluk and a distinction between the Nimshal and the Mashal, which says above? How careful is the Rambam in making this point and this comparison? Where, here he tells us over here, notice again, but after they've come into the inner part of the habitation, does not mean that they see or speak to him. After they come into the inner part of the habitation, it is indispensable that they should make another effort. All that is missing over here. Right, the Rambam, so which do you really follow? Is not the Rambam telling us, you know, something over here of great importance? Namely,
was he saying that, as far as he's concerned, you can't demonstrate ever getting to the Ro'ehu?
Ro'ehu with an Aleph, to see him.
Yeah. In other words, the only thing you can get to is Nimtza.
Right.
Ro'ehu is perhaps,
well, no,
perhaps that very
no, in
subjective.
Truth, in truth, you never see God.
No. The Ro'ehu level, the Ro'ehu Shomeya level, is that intuitive, personal, very, very personal, very inexplicable, irrational,
non-rational
kind of non-rational kind of spark that you get that is that level, that God that goes beyond the Nimtza?
I would say the opposite. I would say that, and put out there when you can attack it, that the speaking to the ruler and seeing the ruler does not really happen. The Navi who does that is not on the highest level. What's the highest level? Being with.
But that's not the way he put. That's not the way.
No,
he
no, that's no. Only part of the Nimshal.
Okay.
That's what the Nimshal is only. In the Nimshal over here, that's the real issue. In other words, when you think you've spoken to God, have you really spoken to the divine being? In a manner of speaking, yes. But it's really your perception, or it's your understanding, or. But he doesn't. I don't think he's comfortable saying that God speaks to man. They're comfortable saying that God, man sees God. In the same way, it's interesting, where you're all comfortable with my statement that man never sees God, right? We're all comfortable with that. Nobody ever sees God. Would you accept also the fact that man does not speak to God? Or better, God does not speak to man. How does God speak to man? God does not have a verbalization powers. He doesn't have a voice box.
Let's use the word communicate. Let's not use the word speak.
Well, use the word speak. He used the word to speak. But that bear.
But the bear in the general sense, meaning of communicating.
Okay, so now you have an interesting question. How does God communicate with man?
You know it? I'm telling.
You pray. Man. You can pray to God. Okay, now I'm talking the other way. How does God communicate with man is the question.
It's the mother of the Torah. Well, that's what you read yesterday.
One second, one at a time. Sorry, what?
This is the mother of the Torah. Moshe.
Exactly. So there's no more there. This
is the bear bull.
So that's why he needs some tradition. He cannot go to the tradition. So the words, these are all
Mishalim allegorical. There's no panim, there's no dibur, and there's no shemirah.
That's the point I'm making.
Yeah, no, clearly.
So the ultimate end is being.
There is no anthropomorphical connections.
Exactly. So the end result is being. It's being with. And of course, interestingly enough, the name Yud Ke Vav Ke, Harambam's interpretation of Ahiyah Shira Hiyah, is the root of God is necessarily existent. Whereas we are all contingently existent, God is necessarily existent. So God's Yud Ke Vav Ke means what? Beingness. God is necessarily existent.
Right.
Cannot not be. Right? Whereas we cannot be, God cannot not be. God is always present and prevalent to a human being.
Yeah.
But you cannot see God. And in what sense does God speak to man? So in the ultimate Nimshal, where it gives you the truth unvarnished, the answer at the end of the day is to be with the ruler and not to really hear and see or make another effort. You're there. Now maybe this will be clarified in one more paragraph, which we haven't done yet. Let me do first the English, and then we'll go through the Hebrew. Know, my son, I would say to you now that a good PhD topic will be to take all the times when the Ram uses the word my son in Morena Bukhim and see if you could connect or construct a theory as to what context does the Rambam use my son in. Similarly, you will see the next page, which you don't have in front of you, he says, a call to attention. Hakshivu. He'aru, right? You should also study whenever the Rambam says this kind of statement, all of a sudden, call to attention, or my son, these are unusual words. What does the Rambam mean by telling you this? Now, the Rambam is a very subtle writer. So the Rambam might say, call to attention means this is the truth, or in fact it's the opposite, right? The Rambam is told to the instruction is going to tell you to connect chapters, to connect paragraphs, to connect statements that are far removed from each other. So he doesn't want you to read that in the sentence book very clearly, because it's one of the simplest person to really get his true message. So is my son a call to come closer, or it's the opposite? Right? You don't know the Rambam until you set up a model for it. But the Rambam did write in cryptically, almost incognito, you can't really recognize the Rambam from this, so you have to be very careful. So now he says, know, my son, as long as you engage in studying mathematical sciences and the art of logic, good, you are one of those who walk around the house searching for its gate. As rabbis, may the memory be blessed, said, go to a parable, Benzema is still outside. So that is a parable. That's in Hagigah Yudalad, right? We all know that. That's Arban HaChasur HaPardes, and Benzema is still outside. So he's outside, meaning he was a great mathematician and a great logician, but on the other hand, he's still outside, correct? If, however, you have understood the natural things, what does natural things mean? Physics. And you've entered into the habitation. So now you've gone to this third, mathematics and logic, now you need physics. Understand the way the natural world works. Science itself. And of course, parenthetically now, today, we're seeing a lot of science, that gives you a greater sense as to who God is. We do on Saturday nights in the winter a class on science and religion, and we see, and we've seen how, whether it's on the astronomical level, the extent of the black holes and the Big Bang and the extent of the universe and the 14 billion years and all that, you really come to this sense of God at the end of the day. At the end of the day, Stephen Hawking will tell you, I can only bring you from the point of the trillions of the Big Bang and forward. Before that, only God knows, quote unquote, is what he will say. So the laws of physics, as they exist 14 billion years ago in the black hole, and as it exists in the microcosm, as well as the macrocosm, all that, it brings you to God. So I emphasize that because in having read this 25 and 30 years ago, I never fully understood the role that physics would play in coming to a knowledge of God. Physics is around, I was thinking, in his medieval context of physics, it made sense. Today, now, it doesn't make sense. This is 25, 30 years ago. But in the last 5 years or 7 years, since we've been studying these kinds of issues, you really see how an understanding of the physical universe really brings you to God. Not only in the simplistic sense that God created the universe, so if you understand the creation, you understand the creator. That we know. Okay, that's obvious. That's a simplistic sense. But in a more profound sense, the more physics you know, the more you are coming to an understanding of God. And it's interesting how in the popular literature, New York Times Tuesday, or in George Will's articles, you see that the more that you study, you come up with conclusions that are so extraordinary, corresponding, I don't mean biblically, but to a sense of God. Right? So we've seen much of that. So here, to get into the habitation, you understand divine science. I'm sorry, you understand physics, right? Now, go ahead. You're walking in the antechambers. If, however, you achieve perfection in the natural things, you can achieve perfection in physics, understanding the physical laws of the universe, and have understood divine science, which means metaphysics, that means the nature of God, metaphysics, you've entered into the ruler's palace, into the inner court, and are with him in one habitation. The Rambam is very clear that to enter into the inner court, to be with God, you have to know metaphysics, nature of God, the oneness of God, incorporeal nature of God, all that in order to get to the being one with God. This all in terms of, coming back to our original question, that Rambam would never consider a handmaiden metaphysics or physics. Rather, to the contrary, for Rambam, metaphysics and physics are the essential teachings of Torah and Mitzvot. For the Rambam, a study of Gemara includes the study of philosophy. Philosophy is not a handmaiden. It is Torah study. This certainly proves that point, without question, that if you want to enter into the inner court of God, you must know physics and metaphysics. Right? So that's important.
How do you explain the way you
Which? Mm-hmm. This? Yeah. Okay, we'll have to come back to that statement and figure out whether or not what is he referring to over here? He's maybe...
Unfortunately, unambiguous.
Well, I'd have to interpret this in light of the other statements that we've studied, number one. Good point. And he tells over here, referring to Torah, right? I gave less time to her. What is the her over here? Okay, now what does Torah include? So how about if we flip this on its side, and we don't have the time right now, but I was going to bring up next, of course, that Torah Perek Dalet, which talks about engaging in the discipline of Gemara, Havayot Abaye Rabba, the argumentations of Gemara, you know, Abaye Rabba, Yushalom Midat, things like that, and the higher levels of physics and metaphysics.
Right.
So, maybe I would be willing to say that the Mata Onata means philosophy. Torah, which includes physics and metaphysics. And what was I spending all my time for the last 10 years doing? Putting together a Mishneh Torah, which deals with the Havayot Abaye Rabba. So I'm really not fully prepared yet, because we have to study this more closely, to come to this conclusion that this is really reversed from what we thought it was. Which means that, who are the foreigners? Who are the other women? All the side dishes that we had over here, the bakers and all that, and they were necessary and they were important, but only because they enhanced philosophy. Enhanced philosophy. my heart was divided to many chambers in all kinds of chokmah. Right? So now, there might be different types of chokmah. Mathematics and logic is one, is two of chokmah. Medicine is another chokmah. Right? So the Rambam was engaged perhaps in too much medicine and too much of the others, and he lessened his time given over to philosophy. Maybe the way we understand this paragraph. Okay, give me one more minute. Okay, good? This is the rank of the men of science. Now, let's look at the Hebrew word for that, and we could look at the Arabic right now. Look at the Vada'a ben Isha, calls him Ashatam, Tasek, B'Mada'im, V'Hahech, Sharetiyim, B'Melechet Ha'igiyon, logic, mathematics. Hariyatam, Miklal, Mekithim, you're surrounding the Hasid. V'Habisim, et Pesach, looking for the gate. Kimosh, B'Lechet, Zohar, Dilek, Moshal, Adayin, B'Zuma, B'Bahutz. Right? Good. Kasher, Hevanta, et Devarim, Hativ'im, natural science, or physics. And you're still in the antechambers. When you perfect the knowledge of the natural order, physics, to be yours, and you understand metaphysics, right? Of the men. Now, here's interesting. Who do Hachamim refer to over here? Sages of Israel. His translation over here is men of science.
If it was the Hachamim above, no, don't get to that. In the previous paragraph, the Hachamim, the classical Hachamim and Ma'aminim,
they certainly don't get there.
They're not getting there.
But those are
Hachamim, the ones who do speculate.
Right. So it's, so is, again, men of science, is a, I don't like the translation of men of science.
No, that's wrong.
Well, I don't know if I was wrong. You have to look at the Arabic before you get to what's wrong or right. You have to see what the Arabic is and see what. And I'm willing to bet that he was a master of Arabic as well as Hebrew, of course. He's not wrong. There's going to be an ambiguity in the Arabic as well. As a min hachamim, great sages, or men of science, it's a very difficult issue because it is an important term to really analyze. And we could look at the, you know, what the Rambam meant by this term. Hachamim, I would say, does not necessarily mean men of law. That's the interesting question. It's not men of law for sure. What does Hachamim mean? It means those who speculate, those who philosophize. Good. But does it mean Hachamim, the sages of Israel? Certainly not the ones above, because they don't do, they accept, they're not those. But when he talks about, I'm going to learn, about Otah Hashid, he doesn't use the word Hachamim at all over there.
Does,
so,
look.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he doesn't.
Him Hachamim.
I'm not talking about those. Look at the next line, five lines
nine. No, he doesn't. No.
In the Kripak, he doesn't use them. So that's what I'm concerned about. So, this is the rank of men of science, or of knowledge. Men of knowledge. How about men of knowledge might be better? Now, the ham shonim show they differ in the perfection. Of a mishai seek mashav Torah. Now, the next page in the English. There are those who set their thoughts to work after having attained perfection in divine science, turn wholly towards God. Now you know metaphysics really, really well. Perfection. You turn wholly toward God, may be blessed. Cherish this line. Renounce what is other than He, and direct all the acts of the intellect towards an exemption of the beings with a view to drawing from them proof of God to God, so as to know His governance, hashkacha, of them in whatever way it is possible. So ultimately, knowing of God results in more perfect hashkacha, divine providence. That is the view of the Rambam. If you look at 3:17 and 3:18, the Rambam makes the point here that what he believes in terms of providence is dependent upon the degree of attaining knowledge of God. Says for 3:18, just for one moment. The divine overflow that exists united to the human species, I mean the human intellect, is merely what exists as individual intellects. Right. He says to us, now if that is so, according to what I mentioned in the previous chapter, that when any human individual has obtained, because of the disposition of his of who he is physically, koach demyon, and his training, a greater portion of this overflow than others, providence will of necessity watch more carefully over him than others. The more you are philosophically, intellectually connected to God, the more divine providence watches over you. If providence is, as I've mentioned, consequent upon the intellect, over here, that intellect and providence go hand in hand. Saying over here, it's obvious. So the more intellect you have, the more providence you experience, which is a very striking statement. Accordingly, divine providence does not watch in an equal manner over all the individuals of the human species, but providence is graded as their human perfection is graded. The more humanly perfect, the more intellectual you are, the more providential you will be. And it quotes the special father Masali that in his providence, God's providence, may you watch over the prophets in a very is a very great proportionate to the degree of prophecy that his providence that they've achieved. And that his providence watches over excellent and righteous men. That's the next category down. It's proportionate to the excellent and righteousness. For it is this measure of the overflow of divine intellect that makes the prophet speak and guides the actions of the righteous men and perfects the knowledge of excellent men. As for the ignorant and disobedient, forget it. Sorry. Their state is despicable proportionately to their lack of this overflow, and they have been relegated to the rank of the individuals of all the other species of animals. Which means that God is not concerned about individual dogs or mice or sheep or ants.
So it sounds like providence is not providence is wonderful.
That's correct. Right.
It's not Hashgacha. It's not Hashgacha.
Well,
it is.
The way the Rambam is defining
for that Hashgacha.
It sounds to me like he's defining providence as meaning that as you are more closely linked
to me,
to Hashem,
intellectually,
therefore your actions and your...
I'll watch out for you.
No, not at all. Hashem's not watching out. It's your actions will be more in harmony
with the divine
with
plan.
With the divine, and therefore, ipso facto, automatically, you are not
subject to the
vagaries of what is bad or foolish, because being linked to that which is anything but bad or foolish, your activities will perforce be only positive and not any of those other things. But it's not that there is a ke'ilu, a providential activity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu watching over these people, but rather it's an automatic byproduct of your linkage to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Absolutely, correct.
So, therefore, you're in harmony. You're not going
to
make these.
What's fascinating about this is that if you read the rest of the chapter, he applies this to Moshe, Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov, and all of what they were all about, and why providence washed over them. They were most connected. Moshe and Avot were most intellectually connected, always with God. Though they functioned personally and agriculturally and businessly with others, really their minds were always connected to God.
That helps understand what we traditionally saw, in my opinion, so now you know it makes it clearer to me, this whole notion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, you know, he watches over the tzaddikim, he's critical of tzaddikim, kehot ha-se'ara, and the greater you are, the greater, you know, punishments you're subjected to for the most minor deviation.
Right, for that reason.
But it's not a punishment for the great guy having made a mistake.
For the great guy meaning?
Meaning Moshe,
right.
He made this very super-minor mistake. It's not that Hashem is, quote-unquote, punishing him. It's rather the fact that he
made the mistake.
Such great connection that for him, this quarter of a degree turn that was out of sync with the level that he achieved took him a zillion miles away.
Right, which is interesting because in Miyahu you have Merachok Hashem Nira Elai, that the person who could be a prophet and still be far removed from God, he makes that kind of mistake.
It's not so much a punishment that Hashem is punishing so much more severely because
he
reached such a high level.
No, I agree.
Rather, it's the consequence of having reached such a high level, such a small infraction takes you so far away.
Right. It's almost ipso facto. Right,
think,
very good.
Which fits into this whole notion of the more you're closer to Hashem, the more providence you have.
Funny, in the summer, I'm going to do a series of classes for the couples on Tuesday nights on five strange biblical narratives. Right, I'm going to get five very strange biblical narratives, like Shaul and the Witch of Endor, five very strange, you know, narratives. And one of them I want to do is Moshe hitting the rock. You know, because that is a very, and I'm going to have to define what I mean by strange. But is it not strange that Moshe Rabbeinu blew that call? Dibatim Rasela and hits the rock. How'd that happen? So that will be one of the five that we deal with and think about that infraction. Okay, that's the end of that chapter and the end of today. Are you going back to Brooklyn?
Tomorrow.